Hey, hey, hey. Hey, Ted Pals. Season 2, Episode 2. We're back. Episode 1 was a bit rocky. Won't it? I'm not going to lie. It was kind of like a Community Shield game that we won, but still weren't ready for the season. But now we are. PJ was on Episode 1, and now we have PM, producer Mike, back in the house. Welcome back.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
We missed you. We missed you, Episode 1. But we've got some exciting stuff. It's going to feel a little bit like Episode 1 because we've got a topic that just won't go away, and I'll get to that in a second. But it's great to have PM back in the studio. Great for Episode 2, and also great to have the reviews. Thanks for sending more, and we're doing a little switch here. This season, we always do the reviews, and they're important, so keep sending them. I don't know why. The person that helps with this pod just tells us, get the reviews. It puts you up the list. Then people can see it. People can listen. And then we get season 3 pickup, you know, and then we just start flying, right? The budget increases.
Nobody understands what happens in California at the Apple headquarters, but they tell us that this is what we're supposed
to
do.
We just listen to them. Yeah. I mean, I'm a college dropout, so those guys that are in Silicon Valley know that we need reviews.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So here they are. Here's my favorite this week. And what we're doing is, give the review, but also say your player in history that you'd love to play with, that you love to be on the field with. And this one's from Skittles 1003. I fell in love with the game watching Schweinsteiger play. He's always been my favorite player, and it would be an honor to play alongside him. He has such incredible skill, vision, and passion on the field, but it's also mixed with composure, poise, and finesse. All of that extends off the field as well as entire attitude and respect towards the game and his career is a constant source of inspiration to me. I've played field hockey. This is interesting. I played field hockey and watching him play midfield informed a lot of the strategy I used to try and employ when I played. I like that. I always think hockey is one of those sports where there is a lot of crossover, field hockey and ice hockey and basketball. I feel like you can find similarities and pull from certain aspects of soccer and it translates.
Movement off the puck or ball and spatial recognition. Yeah, totally.
So, Skittles, thanks for the review. We're going to jump into the pod now. Three topics today. VAR. We haven't talked VAR in a while, but it's something that keeps coming up on this pod. So big announcement. We'll get into that. Number two, Salah. I mean, the guy's insane. We're going to talk about him and how good he is. But number one, Jose Mourinho.
Can you imagine if he wasn't in the Premier League? What would we talk
about? It's great. It's great. I mean, season three, if we don't have Jose Mourinho, we're screwed.
we really are.
No content. And Manchester United fans are always on me. And it's okay. I got a couple of tweets after we spoke about Mourinho in the return pod, the first TAD pod of the season. And one guy said, you're obsessed with Mourinho. Yeah, of course I'm obsessed with Mourinho. This guy is just nonstop entertainment, and he's back at it. This is in a two-week period, Mikey.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So this is nothing new, right? His like siege mentality of dominating the media and deflecting and distracting and galvanizing and drawing a line and being divisive, this is nothing new. We know he's doing it. But the frequency he's doing it lately is pretty remarkable. I mean, in less than a month, here's a list of some things that have happened. There was the shot at Frank de Boer, and we played that sound on the first TAD pod where he basically said worst manager in Premier League history. If you want to learn how to lose, Frank De Boer's your guy. So that was classic. Then he goes on after the Liverpool game and continues with some of that divisive stuff with the De Boer and whatnot, and then has a terrible result in the Champions League. They get knocked out. And he sits there in the press conference afterwards and speaks about it being nothing new. Yeah, you know, Manchester United getting dumped out of the Champions League. Yeah, it's nothing new. Oh, I forgot what I wanted to say. The Liverpool thing. I remember before that he was talking about, you know, some Liverpool fans think it's important, like this game. Some Manchester United fans think that Liverpool, this is the biggest game of this. But no, it's just another game.
Yeah.
He's just minimizing what is the most important rivalry for Manchester United fans and then dumped out by Sevilla and Sevilla outplaying them for two games and embarrassing them, really. And he goes in and says, nothing new. You know, you guys get knocked out of the Champions League. By the way, I was in this chair and I knocked you guys out twice with Porto and Real Madrid. So no big deal. That was pretty crazy. If that was a trial balloon, the message should have been, nah, might want to stay away from ripping Manchester United as a club. That's probably a bad idea. What does he do? He doubles down and gives that 12-minute rant And we opened the show, and that we ripped up our entire format, which we almost never do with NBC, right? NBC Sports Weekend, we've got our format, we've had all our calls, we're ready to go. And we tore all that up because Jose Mourinho went on some crazy 12-minute rant that was so self-serving and insecure, where he basically said, Manchester United doesn't have heritage. Yeah, no. I mean, you guys have been dumped out of competitions. You haven't won a lot. You know, the last 7 or 8 years, the teams have been bad. So, yeah, there's no heritage here. Manchester City, however, man, that team has heritage. Yeah, Jose, bad idea. I mean, don't rip Manchester United as a club. And he also always says, like, you guys, like, you fans and Manchester, he always detaches himself from Manchester United as if he's, like, on the outside looking in, which is an interesting psychological strategy of, yeah, this is what you guys think. This is who you are. You guys don't have heritage. I mean, yeah, not a good idea. So then everyone reacted to that. This is coming off of, you know, he's in second place. He stabilized the club. He won the Europa League last year. I mean, there are more positives than negatives, except for the fact that it's awful to watch them play, which is the one thing he's definitely distracting from and trying to deflect and say, no, forget that sometimes it's turgid and languid and impossible to watch. No, we're talking about a club that doesn't have much heritage. And you're thinking, wow, I can't believe he's saying this right now, when he could be spinning this in a positive way. And he could say all the, you know, the right kind of media manipulation things that move things in a, towards the positives about his tenure. But then, right, they have an FA Cup game, and we're all shocked beforehand because he rests, I guess, quote unquote, rest, more like drops some star players. Right. Pogba doesn't start. Alexis, for the first time, doesn't start. I mean, he sits. I mean, Rashford's not out there. Martial, right? So, I mean, he, I think, ostensibly, showing that the team's not good enough to compete and wants to rest everyone to make a point. And then after a win, you think, okay, well, that's a good response. Got a response from the group. They're in the FA Cup semifinal.
They need a trophy this season.
Yeah, they need a trophy this season. Okay, so maybe he can find a way to rest the narrative, spin it in a positive direction. What does he do? He says this instead.
When it's dark and cold, and that in football means or a period of bad results or a bad result like happened to us a couple of days ago, not everybody has the confidence and the personality to play really. Because to be on the pitch and touch the ball every 5 minutes, and anyone can do it. But to be on the pitch and say, give me the ball because I want to play, that's a little bit more difficult. Not all of them were able to do it.
I mean, that was just one of the things that he said. I mean, there were so many comments in the aftermath of that FA Cup game that were shocking, and we tried to pick one. I mean, we could have picked myriad ones that I guess the theme was, we're not good enough. We don't have the personality. We don't have world-class players. We don't have the mentality. I already went 10 minutes.
No, you did not. That was a
premature
that
whistle.
That was a bogey whistle.
Bogey whistle. So episode two is starting off just like episode one. We're still in off season form. So he basically saying we're not good enough. So he's gone from saying Manchester United as a club is not good enough to our players aren't good enough, and now you're sitting here thinking, this feels familiar, but what does it feel like? It feels like the third season blow-up, right? It feels like what we always see with Jose Mourinho after he's won a title. The difference this time is he hasn't reached that pinnacle yet. He's still growing and progressing and building a group that can go and win something big. Winning Europa League, he made it feel big. It wasn't. And that's not a big trophy. He said Manchester United's never won it. Yeah, neither has Barcelona. You don't hear them saying, man, we really need to make sure that one's in the trophy case. I mean, so he did a great job of progressing things. We're not talking about Sir Alex Ferguson anymore, right? So that's a huge thing. That era's gone, and Jose Mourinho's helped to stabilize what was bad under Moyes, bad under Louis van Gaal. So there is progress. You have to give Mourinho credit for it. But he seems to be sabotaging it. He's blowing it all up right now, saying, we're not good enough. Manchester United hasn't been good enough recently. And the heritage line, I think you could think you could look at it a different way. You could say some people are saying heritage as in the history. Obviously, it has an amazing heritage. I mean, Manchester United, one of the most successful clubs, biggest clubs in the world. No one can realistically criticize the heritage of the club. What he probably meant was inheritance. I if you think about the inheritance, I didn't take over a good club. And yes, some of that's valid. Some of that's gaslighting us for sure and a total straw man argument, but some of it's valid. Yeah, this team has some issues, but it's still, if you look at it, better than the Manchester United team that was the last one that won a title. I honestly think go through player by player, Sir Alex Ferguson won with a team that was not as good as the one that Jose Mourinho has now. So give me a break with the you inherited a poor team. You know what's the reality? You always inherit a great team. I mean, Porto was his best accomplishment, and he's been living off of that legacy forever. Hulk, I mean, Deco, that Porto team almost won the league the previous season. Winning the Champions League was amazing because they were definitely not a minnow, but that was an underdog Cinderella story in the Champions League. But he's always taken over a team that almost won the title the year before. He's never taken over a side before Manchester United that finished below third the season before. And he's been given all sorts of money. I mean, he's spent $500 million since he's been there. The bigger issue is it's awful watching his team play. And if they don't win, then what's he there for? If he's sitting there saying he hasn't been given enough time and enough talent and that's what he needs is more money, I say, man, I'd be worried to give him this summer transfer window and understanding that we're close to probably a collapse. Historically, he's never made it to a fourth season. If you're saying, no, right now we need to give him some more money, I look at Pogba and how bad he is under Mourinho. I look at Alexis and how bad he is already under Mourinho. I look at Lindelof, one of his signings that hasn't worked. I look at Mkhitaryan that's no longer there. What about how he spent money? And by the way, saying that I'm on the same page with the ownership and Ed Woodward and they've done an amazing job is a oxymoron. I mean, it's a contradiction if you're criticizing what you've inherited. So I just think this is typical Mourinho, but it's just coming. It's premature. It's coming before that zenith, right? The moment he's trying to get to. And I'm going to say it. I said it before he got the job. I believe it now. He will never win a title with Manchester United. And so this will all be for nothing. And we're already seeing that he vandalizes clubs on the way out. And no one's really suggesting, and I'm not saying he should lose his job this year, but when you get to the summer, he stabilized the club, he's been able to attract some big-name players, and at that point, I say you cut and run. I say at that point, you leave before he can take a flamethrower to the place. So I mean...
There's the real whistle.
We're back on track. Just one last thing there. You know, Pep's kind of going back to this being Mourinho's thing. I remember Pep having an amazing press conference with Barcelona. And Pep has never really taken the bait with Jose Mourinho. But remember back in the day, Pep's at Barcelona, Jose Mourinho's at Real Madrid. And it was just these, you know, buttonheads. Obviously, the clubs have a lot of history. But these two in particular have a lot of history because Pep was given the Barcelona job coming from the B team, coming from the reserve team. And Jose thought, coming from Barcelona, having been an assistant there, having grown there, and the success he was finding, he'd get that job. And Pep got it over him, and it's never been the same. And Pep said in that press conference, and this is going back a ways, he said this, Senor Mourinho has permitted himself the luxury of calling me Pep, so I will call him Jose. Tomorrow at 8:45 p.m., we face each other on the pitch. He has won the battle off the pitch. He's bested me in that arena the entire season and no doubt will continue to do so. If he wants his own personal Champions League trophy away from the pitch, let him take it home and enjoy it. In this room, and he's talking about, he was in the Bernabeu press conference room, he's just talking about press rooms in general. In this room, Mourinho is the effing chief, is the effing boss. I mean, it was, I remember that was like, that made waves when Pep said that. And it's still true. Jose tries to win the battles in the press room because often he doesn't get a lot of credit for what's going on the field, because if it doesn't win a trophy, and even when it does win a trophy, he has his critics, but if it doesn't win a trophy, I don't want to watch it. I don't want to flip on a TV in a big game and watch Jose Mourinho suck the entertainment and excitement out of it. If it wins a title, some people are okay with that. I mean, I've got the luxury of being neutral and wanting entertainment and not being okay with that. A lot of Manchester United fans are okay with Jose Mourinho right now. But what he's doing in these press conferences, crushing Luke Shaw and unconscionable comments against someone who suffered a double leg fracture and has psychological issues that he struggled with that he's have been publicized with, you know, anxiety and eating disorder based on stress of the demands of the job. I mean, this is someone that needs an arm around his shoulder, and Jose's continually crushing him. I mean, these things crushing Manchester United, the club. I think he's going to run out of time. I don't know if this time a club like Manchester United can put up with it.
It seemed to me, as where I said as a fan, that previous seasons Mourinho was playing chess with the press while other people were playing checkers.
Yeah.
Now it looks like he's going in there and just having emotional responses to what's happening on the pitch.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Is there any way that this stuff is calculated? I don't think so.
Yeah, it is a little, like, it is a calculation, right? It's the same trick he always pulls. I think you're right that this time there's just so much that's different. First off, it's the hardest job he's ever taken.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to think that a club like Manchester United is the most difficult job he's ever had to take.
Right.
And then typically when he loses his job, he leaves the country and goes to a new league, a new challenge, and can leave all of the negativity behind. Yeah, this time he had to watch his old club win a title without him, with basically the same team. He's had to sit and linger with the same press that he was antagonizing, and he did the same divisive things on his way out in Chelsea. By the way, he had them in the relegation zone at one point that season.
Right.
So he hasn't been able to leave the mess like he could before. And I also think these tactics, they just don't work in the modern game like they used to. I don't think he can get the response out of players that it used to get. Like Pogba, for instance, he's not happy. His national team coach, Didier Deschamps, said that in a press conference this week. He's not happy at Manchester United. Paul Pogba is more important to Manchester United than Jose Mourinho is. I mean, because the commercial side of Manchester United runs the whole thing. I mean, it's the only thing Ed Woodward's getting right. I mean, no doubt. I mean, you can't criticize his ability on the commercial side. Paul Pogba's the best thing he's got going. But if Paul Pogba's not playing and he's not enjoying it and he's threatening to leave, that becomes their biggest issue. It's kind of like what's going on with Chelsea and Eden Hazard. Eden Hazard's more important to Chelsea than Antonio Conte is at this point. So I think Mourinho's played a bad hand here, and I honestly think it's a foreshadowing of a collapse that's going to come well before any chance of winning a title under Mourinho.
What happens if they win the FA Cup?
It's kind of like when Arsene Wenger won the FA Cup. I mean, it's good. I think it gives you a good opportunity to say, thank you, Jose. We're going to move on. Mm. But they just gave him a contract extension. Why they gave him a contract extension in the middle of this season when there really wasn't a whole lot to say, man, we need to lock this guy up. I mean, look at history. He's never stayed past the third season. What makes you think this time, no, it's going to be different with us? Manchester United, he'll respect us. We're a different club. We don't operate that way. It was kind of like with David Moyes when they said we're not a firing club. What'd they do right afterwards? They fired David Moyes.
Well, so this question will help bring us on to our next topic, which is going to be Mo Salah.
Yeah.
Because he played for Mourinho at Chelsea.
Football heritage.
Right. If you're a young player trying to become a world superstar.
Yeah.
And you have your head turned by Manchester United being interested in you.
Mm-hmm.
But you have Mourinho prowling the sidelines. Why would you go there?
Really good question. And I think Arlo put this on his Twitter. Someone asked this on Twitter. I think it was Arlo. Or no, someone asked and Arlo responded. And it's a great question because Lukaku, right? Jose Mourinho didn't want him at one point. And now he's come to play at Manchester United and it's working for him. But Lukaku's been in kind of counterattacking teams before. So that's really nothing new. He's thrived in the Premier League in that style. But Mkhitaryan, like when you watch a Bundesliga player of the year come, a guy that's magical, a guy that is one of the most entertaining guys to watch, playing in a free-flowing, exciting, energetic Borussia Dortmund side, to watch him basically die as a player at Manchester United, to watch Di Maria under Louis van Gaal die as a Manchester United player, to watch all the talented players that Jose Mourinho has chewed up and spit out.
Right.
You know, it is a good question. Maybe they don't think he's going to stay long, or maybe the size of Manchester United, like how could you say no when Manchester United comes calling? But maybe they look at Eden Hazard and say, man, he got Eden Hazard to win player of the year, so it's not all bad. But I just can't imagine Antoine Griezmann, who's someone that gets linked with Manchester United, I can't imagine him watching Manchester United in that Liverpool game. Or any big game.
And wanting to step
and,
in that
and saying, game. Man, I can't wait to throw that jersey on and do that for Jose Mourinho. No chance. I mean, I think star players And this is what Frank de Boer was kind of hinting at, but he was talking about Rashford and young players. Rashford should be gone. I mean, Alexis comes in, Rashford goes out of the team. Lukaku comes in, Rashford goes out of the team. I mean, Rashford should be starting every game for a top club in the Premier League. But Frank de Boer was kind of highlighting, under Jose Mourinho, if you're a star player, run. Right. I mean, if you're a star attacking player, run for the hills. Don't come into Jose Mourinho's world. You may win a title. Heck, Eden Hazard, you may win a player of the year, but it's gonna be soul crushing. It really will. So here's one player who's lucky that he didn't have to make that decision. Mo Salah, talking about heritage, right? Yeah, inherit a good team. Well, you had Mo Salah, you had Kevin De Bruyne, two players that are short list in the favorites for player of the year this year. Jose Mourinho didn't think they were good enough. They weren't football heritage for his side. Now they're flying. But Mo Salah, I mean, does it get better in the Premier League right now than Mo Salah? And let's just take a pause for a second and enjoy the musical genius that gave us this song.
Salah, oh, money, money, Roberto Firmino, and so Coutinho.
But that don't matter at all, actually.
We got Salah.
But that don't matter at all, because we've got... You, look up his name. I can't remember. That's good. Got it. That song can't go too long. I mean, you look up his name real quick. I can't remember the guy who came up with that name, but a Liverpool fan. It went viral. Everyone will know. He's sitting in his room in Cork, I think he was living, and gave us that amazing song that went viral. And he saw the writing on the wall that Mo Salah was going to give us. He was going to give us joy. He was going to give us beauty. I mean, just a complete contrast to the conversation we just had about star players at Manchester United, attacking players under Jose Mourinho. I mean, Salah, and it's not hyperbole, he's being brought into messy conversations. He's being brought into conversations about some of the best players to ever play this game. And listen, he's nowhere near there yet in terms of you got to be doing it for a while. You got to be doing it at a high level. You got to be doing it in Champions League, and it's one season of brilliance, really. But it feels like some of the best that play the game. It feels like Messi when he gets the ball. You just think something special is about to happen. And it's how he glides by people. Just like Messi, he doesn't have moves. It's not like Cristiano Ronaldo. I remember when Ronaldo came to Manchester United, it was all stepovers and drags and cutbacks and, you know, elasticos. And I had played against Cristiano Ronaldo when he was a teenager, and it was even worse then. And he's actually simplified his game a lot. And that actually happened at Manchester United as he got converted to more of sort of a winger or a false nine. He really started to simplify his game with a trick here and there. But Salah's got no real tricks. I mean, it's not like Mahrez where he's got all these stepovers and cutbacks and Cruyffs. I mean, he just can unbalance guys and manipulate the ball and use, it's kind of like, what's the like fighting art? Is it jiu-jitsu where you use like someone's momentum against them or... Yeah, we'll just go with that. But I mean, he uses a defender, and look at Britos as a perfect example. He uses a defender's naivete and aggression towards trying to win the ball and movement against them and gets them off balance, and then just has this control in tight spaces, this explosive step, this ingenuity, and this ability to slow down the game while he's playing very fast. And some of the best players that I've enjoyed over the years, I grew up watching Ariel Ortega. He was one of my absolute favorite players when I was younger, watching him play with Argentina. Go back and watch, I think it was the 90, was it 98 World Cup? No, was it 98 England-France? Or yes. Sorry, England-Argentina?
Yes, 98. Yeah,
go back and watch that game. There was one time he megged Saul Campbell in the middle field. But go
exactly what you're
playing.
That was the great Owen goal. Yeah. That was the Beckham stamp.
Yes.
That game.
Yeah, that was where he stamped Simeone. Well, not really. Simeone just fell. But I grew up watching Argentine soccer, like Riquelme and obviously Maradona and Juan Sebastian Verón. But there's something about Salah's game, obviously, that's set up to thrive in this Liverpool setup, right? I mean, when you have Mane and Firmino's completely selfless, the way he plays that number nine position, first off, he vacates that area, and Salah plays almost as an inverted winger, and he becomes the highest guy a lot. It's just set up to let those guys thrive with three really hard-working midfielders, whether it's Henderson and Emre Can or Wijnaldum or Milner or even Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's a system set up so that that top three, that three-headed monster up front, has all the freedom to attack, has all the space to turn and punish teams that are not even open. I mean, a lot of teams will bunker in, and they're even better at playing between the lines lately, and that's some of the part of the game that's taken a long time. But Salah, I just can't believe that Chelsea let him go. I honestly, like, when he went back and it was Roma? Wait, where did he go back?
He went back to Roma.
Yeah, Roma. And it was clear that there's something incredibly special about this guy. And thank God we're getting to watch it week in and week out with the Premier League. And we're going to get to watch it with Egypt in the World Cup. I mean, talk about moments. A penalty kick, last kick of the game. I mean, if you want viral videos, go watch that video where he puts Egypt in the World Cup with that penalty. I mean, this guy is already godlike in Egypt. But the voting for Player of the Year, I think PFA Player of the Year voting already happened, which is ridiculous. Because that performance the other day, four goals, and how he's finishing this season.
Four goals on four shots, too.
I mean, he's one of the most entertaining and most enjoyable players to watch. I'm so grateful that Klopp sets up a system where he thrives and he can be a signature marquee player. And it's leading into what's going to be an incredible game in Champions League.
Yeah, what was your reaction when you saw that?
So Champions League quarterfinal, Liverpool versus Manchester City. And the first game's at Anfield, right?
Yeah.
First leg, which is Wednesday, April 4th. And when I saw that, I was disappointed.
That was my original reaction, too.
I mean, I guess, like, if you're a fan of English teams in the Premier League, this ups the chances of having, of course, now you for sure have an English team in the semifinals.
Right.
But I honestly think and thought both of them had a chance to get to semifinals. I mean, I thought we could have seen this matchup potentially as a semifinal matchup. My biggest neutral soccer fan wish is to see Barcelona, Manchester City in the final. So at least we make sure that that's still a possibility. But I don't want to see these guys face off this early in this competition. But once you get over that, you realize, I mean, this is going to be special.
Liverpool ended their unbeaten run in the Premier League.
Yes, the only team to beat Manchester City in the Premier League. That game was 4-3.
Yep.
Which I think flatters Manchester City more than they deserve because those goals right at the end.
Yeah,
right?
They were knocking at the end. It was tight, but Liverpool carried the majority of that play. Yeah. I remember it pretty well.
And even the first game that was 5-0 at the Etihad, Mane got a red card early on that game. They started that game really well.
Did.
I mean, there were a couple of moments where they almost broke through, and they did break between the lines and got him behind. It was Mane, too, who got him behind early in that game. They should have been 1-0 up before that red card. So, I mean, they capitulated after that. So, you know, it's hard to play Monday morning quarterback. But if there's any kryptonite for this Manchester City team or kryptonite for Pep Guardiola, it's Jurgen Klopp and it's Liverpool. So Manchester City are going to win the Premier League. And that's huge, not only to win it, but to win it the way that they're winning it. Pep Guardiola hasn't acquiesced from his style. It's still free-flowing. It's still exactly what he is. It's the blueprint, the DNA of Reinus Michels back to total football and Ajax and Cruyff and Barcelona. It's the same thing he's been trying with minor tweaks at every major club. And it's going to work, which is incredible. But he is there to win the Champions League. I mean, ultimately, that is why they hired him, and that's what they want.
There's a spot in their trophy room empty.
Yeah.
Waiting for that trophy.
And this could be it. I mean, this could be the year. But out of the entire draw, outside of Barcelona, I honestly thought Liverpool was the second team that Manchester City could have faced that they didn't want to. I really think that they wanted to avoid Barcelona and Liverpool. So they've got Liverpool. And here, going back to Mo Salah, if he's going to be in Messi categories, which by the way, no one's ever going to be in like a Messi category. I mean, that you're basically just, you're going to earn the right to be, have your name said in the same sentence as Messi is the only Messi category you're going to be in. But he is in a category by himself with other greats that just are untouchable, right? I mean, he's going to, I think, be the best to ever play the game when it's all said and done. But he, the next tier If Salah performs in the Champions League like he's performing in the Premier League, if he performs in the World Cup like he's performing in the Premier League, he is in that next tier of world-class players that I feel fortunate that we're alive to watch guys like this play the way they're playing and see him in his prime.
Do you think Klopp expected this from him when he signed up?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so for sure. If you watch Klopp, like with Kagawa and like other talented attacking players and Mkhitaryan, I mean, he one of his gifts at Borussia Dortmund was an ability to identify talent just before they were huge, right? Even Lewandowski, when you look at finding him and bringing him from Poland, you know, these are players that became household names that weren't household names really before Klopp got his hands on them. I mean, that kind of goes back to, we basically have gotten to the point where we just blow right through.
I like that you blow through it. I mean, yeah. It's a created construct.
It's kind of like, it's a prop. And it's also, it's kind of like producers on Premier League weekends that are like, Kyle, rap. Can you rap?
We
need to go to break. We're about a minute late. So last point on this, which is kind of managerial. It sounds like I hate Mourinho. And I don't hate Mourinho. I just hate watching Mourinho teams. And it's hard to root for him because he's so insecure. I wish he would just understand that we all think he's one of the greatest managers ever. You don't have to love him. You don't have to love the style to respect him and think he's one of the greatest managers ever. But one of the areas I think he deserves massive criticism is he doesn't develop players. He doesn't develop players. I mean, give me a break. Find me a handful of players that he inherited and made better. Now, I mean, he gets teams to play better as a unit for sure, and he gets great talented players to do what they don't want to do and play a style that they're more talented to play, which takes talent, which is incredible. But Klopp and Pep Guardiola, you could go through their teams and list a number of players and say, man, they're so much better under Pep Guardiola. And by the way, it's funny, Jose Mourinho listed some of the Manchester City players: Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, Otamendi, right? He went through this list, Fernandinho. All of those players are so much better under Pep Guardiola than they were when he got them. So inheriting players, one of the things Jurgen Klopp's great at and Pep Guardiola's great at is sometimes they inherit players that other people don't want or other people didn't think were important, and they make them integral. Fabian Delph. Who would have thought Delph would have become a left back? Milner, a left back, and contribute as well as they have. Now, you could say maybe Jose Mourinho's done that with Ashley Young, but it's while at the same time taking Luke Shaw, someone that Ashley Young said could be one of the best left backs in the world, and completely demolishing him. So that's one of the things I love about Klopp and Pep Guardiola is you go through their team, so many of those players have improved based on their managerial.
I think what you're trying to say is those managers empower their players.
Yeah, and also Pep, a lot of it looks spontaneous and it looks improvisational, but it's not. If you look at Sané and Raheem Sterling, watch them play this season, and you'll notice a discipline in the attacking positional sense, that the wide play that you get from them and the spatial awareness that they have that leads to better productivity on the attacking side of the field, that's not an accident. He's not saying, you're talented, let me just give you the reins, let me just free you up to do whatever you want, go be creative. He's saying, I'm going to take all of your talents and show you how you can use them in a better way.
A perfect example of that was, we weren't able to show this a couple weeks ago because Monday, City-Stoke game, we had no post game. As soon as the whistle blew and City, you know, controlled that game, they dominated. Pep sprints on the pitch, grabs Sané under his arm, and chews his ears off, all the way into the tunnel, coaching him, telling him how to be better again after a victory. And again, that's where Sané was incredible.
And I mean, here's an amazing Sané story, and then we've really blown through. No commercials now. We're going to lose our budget.
We'll just drop a couple promos.
So. Thierry Henry told me this. I wanted to get it in on the air, but obviously we don't have a lot of time to talk on the air, so it's perfect to bring it in for the Tad Pals. One time Thierry got dragged from a Champions League game at halftime, and he had scored in that game. And he was telling me this story, actually on the campaign trail. I'd brought him on the U.S. Soccer presidential campaign to help me out in Philadelphia at the United Coaches Convention, and he told this story in front of a big group where Pep dragged him at halftime. And he thought, what is he doing? And your initial, especially when you're someone like Thierry Henry, reaction is, I mean, what's wrong with this guy? Why is he embarrassing me? I just scored a goal. And it was because he left his position. I mean, here's a guy who was a part of the Invincibles, who's one of the greatest players to play in the Premier League, the not only assists but goals, one of the best attacking players ever for Arsenal, one of the greatest players to play the game for me. I just think he's incredible. Got dragged at halftime and embarrassed by Pep Guardiola because he said, "You're not playing the game the right way." And Thierry switched and realized, yeah, he's right. I've got to stay wide. And he did the same thing with Samuel Eto'o sometimes. I've got to stay wide. I've got to be in this position. This is what he expects. This is what the team expects of me. He did the same thing with Sané. He dragged Sané from I think it was an FA Cup game against Wigan.
Wigan, yep.
Yeah, dragged him at halftime, embarrassed him in front of the team, criticized him, put him right back into the starting 11 next game, and, you know, ran onto the field to embrace him after the performance. It's the difference between what Jose Mourinho is doing. Like, Jose Mourinho just criticized his entire team in public, right? He said that Matic and Lukaku are the only two who are performing. Everyone else doesn't have the character, the personality. Basically, everyone else, you're not good enough. Pep Guardiola does that. He makes statements. He makes examples of players behind closed doors. He does it where he can control it, where people feel, man, that was embarrassing, but it's safe, it's protected, it's in-house, and he gets better performances out of play. There's a point. It's not figure it out on your own. I better see a good performance out of you next game. It's, you didn't do what I asked. Let me show you why you need to do it, and you're going to be better, I promise you. And then they do it on the field, and he goes, and he embraces them afterwards. Now, once you put all the dots together, you see why he's such a great manager and why people laud him so much and why he might be one of the best ever. I mean, this guy could go down as the GOAT with maybe Sir Alex Ferguson, but it's different. I mean, what he does is different than what Sir Alex Ferguson could ever do. And I just don't know if anyone ever could win the Premier League the way that Pep Guardiola is going to win the Premier League this year. Now, does it come with hundreds of millions of dollars as well? Yeah, but listen, plenty of teams can spend hundreds of millions of dollars and still look nothing like Manchester City. So it's just a great season to enjoy all these guys, even Jose. As much as I give you crap, Jose, I still love you. All right, VAR.
You want to whistle for this? You want to just go?
I mean, we're completely off the rails now.
Let's just go.
Yeah, let's just roll. VAR. So we've talked a lot about this on the pod, and I've changed my stance a little bit.
Are you allowed to do that?
I mean, I don't know. Let's test it out. Let's test it out. I mean, we're basically we're completely ripping up the format anyway. So I'm going to change my opinion on VAR. Not entirely. I still believe in technology, right? I think that goal line technology has drastically improved the game. I think even something as simple as the spray can has sped up the game, has improved the quality of the game, the integrity of the game. VAR is going to be in the World Cup in Russia. So Infantino has announced, he said, we're going to have our first World Cup with VAR. Right? They've been testing it. They used it at the Confederations Cup. It's been used in Bundesliga, Serie A, and FA Cups. It's been used. It's been tested. Major League Soccer has been using it. I would say, all in all, the data will say it's improved the accuracy of the decision, but I think it's hurting the game. I really do. And I've been fighting with Musto about this a lot. Musto's much more slippery slope. Where do you bring it in? You know, you bring it in here, everyone's going to want it elsewhere. I think it's being used in subjective areas that it shouldn't be involved in. You can only bring technology into the game, in my opinion. You can only bring technology into the game when it's binary, when it's black and white, yes or no. Is the ball over the line, yes or no? And that's not, I kind of think it is. Well, I really don't think it isn't. No, it is or it isn't. That's helped. This, is it a penalty? Isn't it a penalty? Is it a foul all the way back at midfield before the, you know, 30 seconds before the goal was scored? That stuff hurts the game, because I think human error is going to be a part of soccer. And by the way, it's a part of VAR. I mean, VAR isn't 100%. There's still a human error. There's still a human watching a screen and making a decision, right? You're just giving the decision maker more information. But what you're losing is the flow and the enjoyment of something organic, something that crescendos towards a moment that rarely happens, scoring a goal. Don't get in the way of that. I feel like I've been watching lately, and it's definitely hurting the game. I would rather have a penalty that was missed, a handball that they didn't catch, a jersey pull that they didn't see. I'd rather that happen. Like, I'm okay with that collateral damage if it means that the beauty of a free-flowing game that doesn't stop, that builds towards these incredible moments of just emotional explosion. You're not going to have that if after every goal there's a chance that it's going to be pulled back to look at something that happened 30 seconds earlier. So I'm worried that it's going too far. Here's where I think it could go right now and stop until they figure out how to help referees moving forward. Because I do think referees get a lot of shtick that they don't deserve because we all see 20 replays and they don't get the benefit of that, right? Offside robs us of goals, right? Offside, outside of ball crossing the line, is the next black and white thing that when it's missed affects the game. I mean, that's the one decision that I think is black and white we can help with technology, and the technology exists. So when we were over last time in England, I spoke with someone from Hawkeye who was at the Manchester United game, and he told me that...
You want to explain what Hawkeye is?
So Hawkeye is the technology that's used in tennis. That's the same technology that's used for goal line technology. Yep. So it's basically a bunch of cameras capture the world, the capture the 3D space that the players are playing on. And you guys use, in a way, you guys use some of this technology with your editing.
Yeah, and when we cut our highlights, yes. Yeah, we have a less complex version of this.
Yeah, so we can do shifts and look at different planes of sight and look at different angles. I mean, that technology is out there, and what it can do, this guy was telling me from Hawkeye, they've proved, I mean, 99.9% accuracy. It proves that they can show the second a ball is touched, which is a chip that's put into a ball to measure the contact, which is a hard thing to see. I mean, that's the reason that calling offside is so difficult. A linesman is watching a defender sometimes sprinting in one direction or moving in one direction, an attacking player moving in another direction, and a ball 20 or 30 or 40 yards away. He's got to know the second it was touched. That's an impossible call.
Yeah.
So they have the technology so that the cameras can capture the space, recognize the difference between the attacking player, the defending player, and be able to know the second that ball was touched by an attacking player playing it forward. I mean, it all exists. They have it. And they've proved that they can, with a light that goes on or the referee's watch, that the same way it does goal line technology, can vibrate if it's off, or it could not vibrate if the attacking player is onside. That exists. That I'd like to see. Because the referee's assistants, I mean, that job is impossible. The offside call is the hardest in the game. And it leads to, when you get that wrong, us missing goals that should stand. Or it leads to a flag going up when it shouldn't. I mean, it just disrupts the game. And the accuracy is so important. You have to get that right. Now, the referee's assistants get that right. I mean, I think the ratio is like in the 80s. It's like 80% accuracy. So they're incredible with how good they are calling this line, but it can be close to 100%. So that's the next piece of technology I'd like to see in the game. I've changed my mind. I'm not a huge fan of the video assistant refereeing. You know, mistaken identity.
That happens so infrequently. It seems to me that that's bringing in an aspect of the game, addressing an aspect of the game.
Yeah, it's like, do we really? Here's the one, I guess, binary penalties, right? That's the next big call. It's not subjective if something's contact-wise on the line or in the box. I mean, that's another, maybe video assistant referee can be brought in when there's a foul. You can't say if it was a foul or not. That's the referee's decision. But what you can do is tell the referee that was on the line or it was in the box so that there's not a penalty given that wasn't, or a free kick outside the box that should have been a penalty. Where do you stand for?
I think we're rushing it. I was unhappy. Yeah,
you mean bringing it in this World Cup?
You know, I know that they've been doing it in these other leagues. I was watching... Which game was it? It was Tottenham in the FA
Was this
Cup.
Where they stopped it? There was like four...
Several times.
Yeah, goals that were...
They called back a goal that Llorente scored for a little bit of contact in the box. It had just looked like it was ruining the game. It just was like, this is what we've been afraid of. We've been afraid of stoppages, the flow stopping, the game not being the same, and you not even getting the decisions right.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't want to blame them implementing it and testing it out. I think that, you know... Sports need to evolve with the times, but you need to have more time to smooth out the edges. This is not ready.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And I don't know if it'll ever be ready. Like, honestly, maybe it's just I've never been one of these purists that, you know, the old-fashioned people that are like, hey, bitching about call is part of the game. But yeah, kind of it is.
Right.
That is part of sitting in the bar afterwards and feeling hard done by.
How many times have we gotten controversial pullouts at the end of games? It's part of the game.
It's drama. It's excitement. Yeah. At the end of the day, this is entertainment. Now, the accuracy of the calls, it's a difference between someone getting like losing their job or a team going to a World Cup. So
the
stakes are enormous and they're higher than they've ever been. I just think there's an area of the game that you can't touch just subjective.
And
you can't go there.
You mentioned earlier, for the listeners out there, I'm the lead highlight cutter for our games on the weekend.
Yeah.
So many times during a game, Kyle or the Robbies will say, Mike, was that offsides? Sometimes it's clear. Yep, off, definitely. This one, guys, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've looked at this 10 times. Take a look at it.
We are inconclusive. The majority of the time, we look at
totally
10 replays, and we're still like,
is that a penalty?
I'm not really sure that's a handball, or I'm not really sure that's a penalty. You can't have people changing calls on the field when it's that inconclusive, right? I mean, there was one in MLS the other day. Clint Dempsey got a red card and I think his reputation maybe hurt him a little bit here, but like someone had grabbed, an attacking player or a defender had grabbed him from behind, and Clint went and swiped the guy's hands away from his jersey.
Sort of like, I didn't see it holding him back or something.
It looked like he threw an elbow.
Yeah.
And the guy hits the ground, immediately goes down like he got hit in the family jewels and lies on the ground, right? The referee asks, you know, does the box outline and asks for VAR, and they give Clint a red card. I watched the replays that the broadcast used, and these are the same replays that they have, that the video assistant referee is looking at to help the referee make these decisions. And they were inconclusive. Two of the replays made it look like he just swatted his hands away, which is more petulant, and you can get a yellow card for that. One replay from an angle that's not great really makes it look like he elbows him, you know, he cocks his elbow and throws it down below the belt. So I look at that and I say, how did you come to the conclusion, like definitively, that you know exactly what happened there? I mean, I just think that's going to start to happen a lot. And now there's going to be bitching at the bar after a World Cup game. The stakes are going to be enormous. And the bitching now isn't, I can't believe the referee missed that. It's, you saw like 20 replays. How did you? Now I think people are going to be incredulous.
And it's also going to be a faceless decision, right?
You don't know who to blame.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to be able to yell at Phil Dowd or whatever.
Yeah.
Martin Atkinson. It's like an actual. It's a mystery person behind it.
Well, and then our referees. Like, what is the long term impact and the psychology of referees? Are they going to let more stuff go, knowing that they have that insurance, they have that backup of someone making some of these calls behind the scenes? It's just, I don't like it.
Yeah, are they going to be less decisive in key situations?
Yeah, I mean, these referees, like, more than technology, we need, like, we need therapy groups. We need like, educational programs to help fans not be so vitriolic and so demeaning towards referees. Coming from the guy that just yelled at referees constantly during his career. So I'm in a program right now trying to rehab myself so I can be more respectful of referees, even in my retirement. But far.
That's respectable from you.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm working on it.
Okay.
I'm working on it. So, I don't know. Let us know, Tab Potters, what you think. I'm at Kyle Martino on Twitter. So, I don't know. If you like VAR, give me your defense of it. And we also need to find a way to get through a World Cup that the U.S. aren't in. And, maybe arguing about VAR will be our way to distract ourselves from the fact that the red, white, and blue are not going to be out there in Russia. But that's all for the Tabot today, guys. I mean, we're still working towards just a flawless. We're like Pep Guardiola. You know, we don't coach tackles. We're still making mistakes. We're season one Pep Guardiola Manchester City. We have a lot of talent, a lot of potential. It's great to have you back, PM. PJ had a decent first performance. I'm not going to throw you guys under the bus. I think that we all need to perform a little bit better.
There's a nor'easter coming. Just, you know.
I can't believe you made it in. By the way, no one came into
NBC
today. We're the only ones here.
Except for Kyle and I.
It's like a night at the museum over here.
We will be back next week, though, right?
Yeah.
To talk after the U.S.
Yeah. Exciting young roster for U.S. team. So it'll be interesting to digest that performance of a bunch of new crop. some talented kids, some kids that are coming from all over the world.
No Pulisic.
All different leagues, different tiers of those leagues. It's exciting. I'm looking for Tawaya. I mean, his dad was the man.
Right.
All right, Todd Butters, stay on your feet.